nerderotic.com.
So we have Supergirl in the Odyssey. Now there's still news with Supergirl. The blame game is on and it is going to shit. And I love every minute of it. And the reason I love every minute of it is because the studio and a lot of content creators gassed Superman up to be something it absolutely wasn't. I knew it at the time. I know it now. I will know it in the future. And I mean, we could have a difference of opinion on whether people like it or not. And there was a lot of people out there, probably people in the chat right now, who liked it. And that's fine. But making it out to be this massive blockbuster hit when it wasn't, and then bringing in excuses like it made $300 million on digital and it made back its money on merchandise when in the real world, I haven't run across a single person wearing the Superman's James Gunn shirt in the wild. I've seen him at comic cons, but not in the wild anywhere, not fucking anywhere. So that's utter horseshit. A lot of people gassing this movie up. And, you know, there was a point where we just go, okay, let's wait for Supergirl. Let's see how it does. You know, and it was the same thing with Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel made $1 billion, which is a lot more than Superman. And we know why it made $1 billion. And a lot of people were gassing it up. And it was weird that a lot of people who were against Captain Marvel were gassing up Superman for precisely the same reasons people were gassing up Captain Marvel. Just makes you wonder. That's all. Just makes you wonder. So we just said, we'll wait. Okay, we'll wait. And you know what? We were all wrong except for Mahler. Now, Mahler was wrong too, but he was the best at guessing the box office. He was the best and the most skeptical, as he should be. I was too nice. Ryan was too nice. Everybody was, because I don't think this thing cracks. It's definitely not going to crack 200 million worldwide. I don't know if it cracks 150 million worldwide. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because as I predicted in my vidya, Supergirl will be available on digital starting July 28th, but it's July 28th, which is 2 days after Spider-Man premieres, Spider-Man Brand New Day. I predicted it would be on digital by the time Spider-Man comes out. And, you know, I guess I was close. Now, if they were smart, they'd put this thing on digital like in an hour, but they're not smart. It was number four at the box office. It hit number four. Young Washington bodied Supergirl, an Angel Studios movie coming off a fucking Animal Farm and all that bullshit. A film that uses generative AI. Beat it. I was supposed to go see it and I haven't yet, but I will. I'm going to go see it. But yes, Supergirl on digital, July 28th. And I'm waiting for James Gunn to come out and say, oh, this was planned because we want everybody to see it before Lanterns. Is that going to be his excuse? I predict that's his excuse. He's done. The DCU is done. It's cooked. And now the videos can be made. And I'm interested in seeing them on what they do next, because I honestly don't fucking know. Well, if you ask me, I would say make Batman movies, because if we want to use the term superhero fatigue, now there's the literal sense that everybody's tired of every superhero movie, which is just not true and never will be true. But then there's the nuanced look at superhero fatigue where, oh, you could still make Spider-Man and Batman movies, but as far as the A, B, C, D, Z tier characters, those days are done. We were healthier before. We used to get movies based on comic books that weren't even about superheroes. History of Violence, Sin City, Ghost World, whether you like it or not, Scott Pilgrim, whether you like it or not. And then, you know, outside of Marvel and DC, Hellboy, Dread, The Crow back in the 90s. But yeah, we would get The Mask. We'd get films like that. We don't get that anymore. It usually goes straight to streaming. I mean, that's its replacement. But we don't get that anymore, which is sad, because I liked a lot of those movies. Dread is the best. So Supergirl will be on digital on July 28th. And now the blame game. Now, Az made a great video on this today. there was estimates and people trying to flex that Supergirl made over $100 million worldwide. Well, it turns out those estimates were wrong. It has not hit $100 million worldwide. It's at $99,472,071. I almost said cents, but dollars. So it's at $99 million worldwide. The international is abysmal, and so is the domestic. And I don't think it hits $100 million domestic. I don't know if it hits $75 million domestic at this point, considering next week is the odd. The Minions and Monsters, a lot of people are saying it underperformed. Okay. A lot of people are saying it underperformed. But, you know, I've got something that might contradict that. Again, Az found this. And I just want to point out that I think a major record just got by, as far as box office is concerned, got by everybody. You know, and I don't think enough people are talking about this, guys, because Minions and Monsters made $16 billion at the box office just on Friday. Holy shit. Now, the international numbers seem to be a bit off. So clearly, the U.S. likes Minions and Monsters more than the international market, which only has 12 million. But $16 billion, ladies and gentlemen, thanks to a box office mojo, which has turned to complete shit since it was bought by some fucking corporation. Don't show this to John Campia because he might think it's real. $16 billion. Well done, Minions and Monsters. Yeah, so Supergirl is tanking. It is, was, and will be in the future the most predictable failure of all time. But keep in mind, as we look at the Odyssey trailer ratio, and I looked at other ratios, the Acolyte was ratioed. The Marvels, not quite ratioed, but close. Supergirl was not even close to being ratioed. Not even close. Overwhelmingly liked on YouTube. And now it's Warner Brothers, who had a great year last year outside of Superman, had a bunch of number ones at the box office, had Sinners, which they put a lot of money into, which was just passed up by Obsession as the most successful rated R something. Whatever record Sinners had, Obsession beat it. Black Twitter most affected. Just want to point that out. Black Twitter most affected. They are really upset about it. It's a dark day at the dead cinematic universe. And James Gunn is a lame duck CEO. He's just playing it out till his administration ends, which will be soon. The question is, does he quit or get fired? Far be it for me to agree with John Campia, but in a sense, I do. He made a prediction. By the way, the reason for this prediction is completely different, right? John Campia, who can't see past his own personal political biases, thinks James Gunn should quit because he's doing so great. And why work for David Ellison, who met with the president once and maybe talks to him? So he said that James Gunn should leave and go back to Marvel out of principle. You know, James Gunn, the most principled man in the world, you know, honest, authentic, good American values. James Gunn is going to quit a Hollywood position where he is CEO based on his principles. No, I think he quits with his tail between his legs and does the, you can't fire me, I quit. And then crawls back to Marvel to beg Kevin Feige, who might not take him back. So here's what I know. Their relationship did not end well. I don't think this shocks anybody. I don't think this surprises anybody. Now, just because a relationship doesn't end well in Hollywood, which happens all the time, doesn't mean people won't work with each other again. But if the whole, like, good luck, buddy, going to work for the competition after we fired you for some jokes. And listen, you could not like the jokes, and I won't complain about it. I still think there were jokes. There's an awful lot of them, though. Kind of weird. So he's mad that he got fired. Kevin Feige's mad that he went to the competition. So he would have to come crawling, begging for his job back. I think it's more likely that he's just back at Troma. But you know where he won't be? Finishing his 8-year plan for the DCU. Man of Tomorrow needs to be The Empire Strikes Back and The Godfather Part 2 combined. And I don't know if that even saves his job. But it needs to be a 10 out of 10 movie that is considered for Oscar nominations that also makes $1.5 billion at the box office worldwide. Then he maybe saves his job. I think the likelihood of that happening is, I think we're more likely to get The Wind's a Winner before that. And I'm loving it. I'm loving all of this because, as I mentioned in my video that's coming out tomorrow, pattern recognition. Again, this was pretty obvious. I won't say the left, we'll say detractors, we'll say people who try to question what I do and my friends do. They like to, I'm not the first person to come up with this take, by the way. This has been out there for a long time. They like to play dumb so they don't have to directly respond to a nuanced argument. They just play dumb. They go, I don't understand why everybody's so mad at The Odyssey. I don't understand how people can watch a trailer for Supergirl and judge the movie before it comes out. I don't understand. They fucking understand. They understand. The thing is with Supergirl, it was pretty obvious from the trailers when they had Krypto, the CGI dog, piss on Superman's face in the first 2 minutes. And that's the opening of the film. It was done at that moment. That was the moment it was done. Millie Alcock could have shut her mouth the whole time and it still would have flopped. Maybe not as bad. Don't know. Don't care. It's the biggest flop of the year. It's going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars for Warner Brothers, but it's far bigger than just one flop. It destroys the DCU, a cinematic universe that they can never restart now. So we can bring back Snyder and Joss Whedon will become friends and build a universe together, and it wouldn't save it. There is no shot for the DCU. I wouldn't even try. I would make singular movies. We talked about it a couple days ago. You have some great graphic novels you could adapt as singular movies or a couple movies. Take the approach of the early DC animated universe. Take that approach. That's how you move on. The cinematic universe is dead for everything. It's even dead for Marvel. And they're the only ones who really pulled it off. I guess they're doing one in A Song of Ice and Fire. That's not going well, despite what X says. Just let's wait till the end of the season because House of the Dragon is really bad now. But like, we have a behind the scenes Supergirl bomb, competing cuts, creative differences, exclusive. Well, in this article, we find out that there was multiple test screenings, maybe not 8, but there was 4 that we know about. We also found out that James Gunn had a lot to do with this movie, including, as you all know by now, the needle drop song at the end was James Gunn's decision. And it's probably one camp trying to blame the other camp for its failure. It was a moment of extreme disappointment for those involved as the stakes were high, particularly for DC. Supergirl would be a key test for the Warner Brothers division at the first feature not written and directed by James Gunn, although he was heavily involved. Following last year's inaugural outing, Superman, it needed to work to prove the studio could expand beyond projects directed by Gunn. The A-list filmmaker, is he? James Gunn is not an A-list filmmaker. That's ridiculous to say. Because he's a CEO, doesn't make him an A-list filmmaker. As a matter of fact, I think you can count A-list filmmakers on one hand with 3 fingers right now. Behind the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, Peacemaker and the Suicide Squad, and the very public face of the brand months later, the Supergirl outcome is now well known. The movie starring Millie Alcock as the title character and budgeted in the $170 to $180 million range crashed and burned, and its opening weekend grossed just $37.1 million, even lower than the reviled DC-centric bomb, 2024's Joker, Folie à Deux, which opened at $37.6 million and was not made by Gunn or Safran. And while one failure need not be an indictment of a slate, there have been all sort of think pieces as to why the movie failed. Was Alcock right for the role? Was Gillespie right for the take? Are audiences tired of superheroes? Was opening the movie in late June a mistake? Was the budget too high? The fate of Supergirl may have been seeded early on. Well, I can tell you right now that you could have released this thing in the middle of February with no competition, and the result would have been exactly the same. How do I know this? If people want to go see a movie, they'll go see it. They're not going to go, well, I don't want it. Man, there's all these other movies confusing me right now. If they want it, Obsession proves that. Obsession proves that. It's on fucking VOD and people are still going to the theater to see it. So that's kind of a horseshit argument. But I think it is an indictment of the slate. It absolutely is, because it shows that James Gunn is a liar. He said every film would feel different, and it doesn't. Gunn and Gillespie had creative differences over the direction of the movie. Numerous sources tell The Hollywood Reporter, and the film never found its footing in the post-production process. The test scores, which are counted on the scale of 100 points, never escaped the 60s, according to multiple insiders. Another insider said the movie's top score was 70. And all those people should be fired. They were not creatively aligned, even though Gillespie was hired by James Gunn, is the polite way of describing things, said another insider. Other insiders dispute the characterization, saying Gunn, Safran, and Gillespie had a normal amount of healthy friction as any filmmaker studio has as a part of the process of making a movie. And multiple sources say the duo respect the filmmaking chops of Gillespie, known for guiding Margot Robbie in the Oscar nomination I, Tonya. Well, that makes you qualified for Supergirl. Filming wrapped in 2025, and as early as the fall of that year, the studio and Gillespie knew the movie wasn't working. After a December test screening, I was told that screening was bullshit. The studio decided to take matters into its own hands and took charge of the post-production to make its own cut. The studio also enlisted writer Jeremy Slater, a Gunn favorite who previously wrote an unmade feature based on a DC superhero, The Authority, to help with the post-production process. That didn't help. What's he worked on in the past? Let's take a look, shall we? He has worked on... The Fan4Stick and Moon Knight, Godzilla, Kong, Exorcist remake. Oh, and the live action Death Note on Netflix. I can't imagine why it failed. The extent of Slater's involvement is unclear, although it seems he helped write scenes for a 9-day shoot of additional photography. Original screenwriter Anna Naguero remained involved in the post-production process as well. One issue at play was the climactic fight, which was reconfigured, I can tell. Other issues with the movie are unclear, but it is known that the music was a key friction point. From the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie on, Gunn established himself as a master of the movie soundtrack and the all-important needle drop, earning praise for finding the right song and dropping it at the right time. I would say he's far away from that. Gillespie also has a reputation for melding music to movies, as seen in Cruella in 2021, that cast Disney's villainous blah, 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 blah. The movies had at least 4 test screenings. At least 4 test screenings. According to sources, with screenings held in December 2025, as well as February and March of this year. And while social media users and critics are dunking on the movies, use of a cover of Jimmy Eat World song, The Middle. The big needle drop in the final set piece at the February screening was a cover version of Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun. You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. That song choice came from Gunn, but it ultimately was abandoned for Jimmy Eat World cover. The movie employed 2 editors. There was so-and-so and so-and-so, don't care. There were signs that things were getting better. Deep into winter, test scores improved and hit the low 70s. However, rather than continue to tinker away at the cut, the studio decided to force a bake-off by creating 2 cuts, one by Gillespie and the other by the studio. You know what? You can take the people out of the company, but the company remains the company. That is the most Warner Brother of Warner Brothers moves. Doesn't matter if you like it or not. These are facts. Zack Snyder was better at DC. He was more organized at DC, and he got better results at Warner Brothers. It is unclear what major differences emerged, but one source says Gillespie's version was 11 minutes longer and featured more of the villain Krem, played by so-and-so. When the 2 competing versions tested, the scores surprisingly dropped significantly Although the studios inched out ahead in Gillespie's, but only by 2 points, according to sources. Gillespie's version scored yeah. Are we trusting this vote, by the way? Is this like a mayoral election? We're doing test scores for competing versions, one from the CEO and the studio and one from the director. And oh man, the studio eked out. Wow. Crazy how that happened. They both would have sucked, by the way. Gillespie's version scored strongly on song choices, pacing, and villain. Ecking out a win, even a middling song, the studio chose its cut as the one to go with in theaters. So the studio investigated itself and it found out it was innocent and right. A studio insider says the differences were not particularly pronounced. Studio insiders paint the back and forth process as routine. Shit. The fuck out of here. So blah, blah, blah. In many ways, the strategy remains intact despite the setback. Gunn and Saffron will continue to guide the ship until Ellison takes over in a couple short months. Perhaps the biggest challenge ahead for Gunn and Saffron may be building a superhero studio right as superhero movies are no longer a bulletproof genre for moviegoers. Gen Z does not care about superhero movies, noted a studio head. Bullshit. Gen Z fucking loves manga and anime, which are filled with superheroes. They like superheroes. I'm going to defend Gen Z on this one. They don't like shitty superhero movies. They don't. Just like Gen X, Gen Alpha, even those crazy boomers, they like good superhero movies, not shitty ones. There have been too many shitty ones. You cannot survive. You cannot fucking survive putting out 6 flops in a row before you start your DCU. Would have been 7 if Batgirl came out. By the way, partially written by Anna Naguero. You had one chance to get one going, and that one chance was a good Superman movie, which you did not deliver. And the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the performance of Supergirl, which actually did more destruction to the character of Clark Kent and Superman, which are essentially the same. You lose! You lose, James Gunn. You know what? Big difference being a director and a CEO, isn't it? A CEO likes to run his mouth on threads. I mean, roasting Grace Randolph is funny, and then Grace Randolph roasting you is funny until your movie comes out and bombs and costs a studio $200 million. Then it ain't so funny. I mean, it is to me. I'm laughing. I'm laughing my ass off. This has been an awesome week. Thank you, guys. I live for this shit.
Nerdarotic.com. Please subscribe.